the introduction to growing up, to maturing, is actually found in, or can be found in many places, but a convenient place is Kliyokar in Parshas Todos. Kliyokar tells us, the Pasuk in fact says, that everybody named Esav, Esav. It was a universally given name. The reason, Chazal say, is because Esav relates to the word Asui. It's finished. Asui v'gamur is the Lashon Chazal. It's finished. The symbol of Asui and Gamur is hairy. Hairy. If you look at little children when they study the Parsha. I'll make a little doll of the two twins, and Esav has got a beard, body hair. That's the symbol of Asui. Yaakov is smooth skinned. And that's a symbol of that which is not finished, not yet done. The Kliyokar explains, what does it mean by done and not done? It says, essentially, the difference between growth and maturing. I like to differentiate between growing and maturing. Esav has everything that he will need in order to do what he wants to do in this world at birth. He has his five senses and his taiva, his ratzon. Five senses plus ratzon is all a person needs for olam hazeh. Yeah, but he can't conquer countries as an infant. Let's get bigger. That's true. He needs to get bigger. It means he needs to grow. But he doesn't need to mature. He can remain with exactly the faculties that he has when he was born and do nothing but grow. Le'umat zot, by contrast, Yaakov is born with not one thing that he needs in order to do what he's supposed to do in this world, which is to mature. And there's absolutely no trace of that at birth. None. No. There's no trace of maturity at birth. The baby shows no signs of anything that would refer to the intellect, refer to the ability to change, to reflect, to look at a situation, to modify based on the situation, to grow, to become more compassionate, to modify his nature. None of that is evident at birth. And so the combat, so to speak, the issue at hand between Yaakov and Esav was Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Chazal say that they were even debating the matter of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba in the womb. And Olam Hazeh requires the five senses and taiva, plus growing. You need to become a big ball taiva. You need to get your five senses big developed. Whereas Yaakov is the Ish Tam, because in order to achieve Nitzchius, in order to achieve Olam Haba, you need things that are developed later in life, usually starting the first traces of it at Bar Mitzvah, the more substantial component at age 20, and from there, Chazal describe in the Mishnah and Avos, a progression by which the person develops more and more of what it takes to become a mensch. And that, Kliyokar says, was the split right at birth, and everyone saw it, that Esav was born Asui v'gamur, that when it comes to this world, he has it all. And when it comes to this, to the mission, to Yaakov's mission, Yaakov has nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not a trace. It's probably fair to say that in the world of Esav, the person achieves everything that he was meant to achieve in this world when he maximizes the growth of his five senses and his taiva. Somewhere between ages 20 and 30, the person maximizes their physical prowess, their physical capacity. And so from that point forward in the world of Esav, it's downhill all the way. And in fact, Esav's sole desire as he gets older is to somehow still be 25. That is what Esav is looking forward to, and he wants to go to the gym and diet and carry on and whatever he needs to do to somehow be able to imitate or emulate or carry on like a 20 or 30 year old. By contrast, in the world of Yaakov, everything that a person is able to do first starts becoming a reality at around age 20 to 30. They first start settling in to be able to realize that the world has a purpose and that our purpose is to be able to modify and to grow. He starts extending himself to include others, to include a wife, to include children. He starts expanding his horizons so that he's not so narrowly focused just on himself, and he's able to incorporate and include others and other relationships. That begins around age 20 to 30 and finishes when his tour of duty in this world is over. And so we find that people's, the great people, their most majestic moments in this world are at death's gate. The most transcendent, the ability of a human being to accomplish in the world of Yaakov happens just before the person passes away. He mentions this, an interesting aside, and I'll just leave it as an aside, giving you the gift. You can see it inside. I'll just give you the gift and pass it on. If anybody wonders whether this world is the end of the story, is the place where reward and punishment takes place. So Esav's got a problem. Esav's problem is, I was a good boy. Why didn't you give me good things, Hashem? I was a good boy. In the world of Yaakov, the greatest achievements that a person has is right before he passes away. When exactly would he be looking to get the reward if this is all it is? There has to be an Olam Haba. What possible reward could there be to somebody who's a moment later is passing away? It has to be Ba'akev Esav. Only when Esav's rule and his dominion is over, when Esav no longer dominates and no longer runs the physical world, Yodo, then Yodo Achezes, then Yaakov is able to get his reward. Yaakov cannot possibly get his reward in the world where the essential accomplishment in this world is as we leave the world, not as we master and conquer it. Bless you. Just give you an illustration. I know you're familiar with these stories, but it pays to understand what I mean. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a person whose students said that Darwin was able to come up with this upside-down theory of human development because he never met Rabbi Yisrael. Had he met Rabbi Yisrael and seen what a human being could become, its total and absolute mastery over every single one of his kochos ha-nefesh, of his faculties, every single one of his faculties, there was no intensity, that's the key. There was no intensity. You can do a little exercise, you know. If I tell you, choose something in the base measures and don't look at it for a week. But don't think about it. Don't let it burn a hole in your stomach, not a hole in your chest, not a hole anywhere. Just decide that you don't look at it for Gemara. End of story. If it's burning a hole, that's not Rav Yisrael. Did I check? Did I look? Did I see? Did I not see? Did I... That's not Rav Yisrael. Rav Yisrael is, you decide, I choose what I see and what I don't see. Doesn't get me worked up at all. Not taking score, not doing a report card, not reporting to somebody. I decide. Because I'm in charge. He was that with every single fiber of his being. Everything. How he walked, how he looked, how he spoke, everything that he did. Every motion. There was not a superfluous motion. One of the Talmidim of the Talmidim of Rav Yisrael, Rav Pam Zatzal, couldn't fathom that a student would use the word whatchamacallit in a sentence. You hadn't thought through the whole sentence before you started? How could that be? The student of a student of Rav Yisrael. It's actually a third generation student of Rav Yisrael. Rav Yisrael was an absolute mastery. But the mastery grew over the span of a lifetime. It's not something that he accomplished in one day. It grew to be able to be at peace and be fine. The other day somebody told me about a certain gathering of rabbis. At the gathering there was a siyum. One of the people who was in attendance at a siyum is a great rav who recently had a stroke, Rachmana Litzlan. And so he was in his wheelchair, but it was his first appearance outside of his home after recovering from the stroke. So at the end of the siyum was a kaddish. All of the rabbonim at the head table got up and turned around and faced Mizrach to answer the Kaddish at the end of the Siyum. And one of the Rabbanim is sitting there like nothing happened. Sitting in his chair, answering Amen, Amen Yeheshmeh Rabbah, like nothing happened. Everybody else got up and he was just sitting there because he was not going to leave this man sitting by himself, facing the wrong direction at the Kaddish. And everybody looked and saw there wasn't 1 ounce of, I gotta do this. This is really important. I gotta just sit here. Simple. In the popular parlance, we say a no-brainer. Easy. But it doesn't become easy if you just decide that it's going to be easy. It becomes easy because you take on what Yaakov was here in the world for. Yaakov was not just here to follow the rules. Yaakov was here to become the more developed human being. That the rules were the incentive. The rules were the direction. The rules were the guide. But the essential nature was maturity. Was to not get worked up where you're not meant to get worked up, and to get worked up where you are meant to get worked up. So Rav Yisrael had the opportunity to apply his teachings. In his last trip to Paris, I don't know if you are aware that Rav Yisrael Salanter was one of the early Kiruv professionals. While nobody paid him, he went far and wide to try to spread the observance of Torah as it was meant to be spread, as it was meant to be observed as an adult, as a mature, developed adult, not just somebody sitting around trying to follow rules, as a mature adult. And in that last trip to Paris, he fell ill. The community was a secular, basically secular community, didn't know what to do with this old Jew who was about to pass away. They found a room And they appointed a fellow from the community to look after him. If he needed anything, that he would look after him. So there was Rav Yisrael and this fellow, and Rav Yisrael felt that his moments in this world were ebbing to an end. So he turned to the fellow and he said, "Have you ever been with a dead body before?" So the fellow got all, no, never. Well, let me explain to you exactly what happens. Let me explain exactly what happens when a person dies and why it is that you have nothing to be scared of. Here's what happens first, and here's what's going to happen second. And he kept on going over with him until he was absolutely certain that the fellow would not be scared to be around a dead body. And he said Kriya Shema and passed away. That's how Rav Yisrael ended his life. As an absolute adult. Not for one moment losing it in any fits of ecstasy, in any, but I gotta just connect with on high, you know, I'm about to pass away. It's a human being here. That needs to be taken into account. He might be frightened. I have the ability to allay his fears. Yeah, but the corpse we're talking about is me. That's right. The corpse we're talking about is me. And we have to explain to him exactly what's going to happen so that he doesn't lose it and doesn't get afraid and doesn't get frightened when I die. That's how Rav Yisrael ended the career of somebody who became the absolute master of every single fiber of his being. And he did it without any sense that he had anything else to do in those moments. There was nothing else on the agenda. That was it. Only one thing to do was to reassure the watchman that it was okay to be around a dead body. That won't happen to a 20 or 30 year old. It's not possible to develop to that degree at such an early age. It's a road that if a person is on that road and growing along that road, that it becomes possible over the span of a lifetime. And if somebody were to then ask, so where did Rav Yisrael get the reward for being that developed at a moment like that? The answer has to be in a world to come. It doesn't make any sense to say, what reward did he get now? For being so tuned in. Such a kiyum in ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. It's an absolute kiyum of the central mitzvah of Yehavta L'Reacha Kamocha. Where's the reward? Is it fair? And the answer is that it's absolutely fair, because that is not the place for such reward. It's an eternal world where there's absolutely appropriate to be able to give reward for that kind of accomplishment. So by way of introduction to the concept of maturity, we have the Kli Yukar split. And unfortunately, many people that I encounter approach their personal growth with an ace of orientation. They don't look at personal growth like Yaakov. They look at it like Esav. So Rabbi, what should I do to get this mita changed? Hello? This is not a grade school. We're not reporting to some school teacher. This is the real thing. This is actually about growing in our midos. It's actually about developing ourselves. This is not about getting the job done so I can retire. The world of Esav is designed to accomplish as much as possible by age 30 and then cruise off into the sunset. In the hopes that I made enough by the age 30 to still be with me for however long I managed to live and play golf. In the world of Yaakov, you're first getting started at age 20 and 30. Just beginning the process of getting a grip on why it is that we're here and what the tools that we have to develop ourselves, those tools that were not evident at all at our birth. So with that little introduction, let's go back. Some of you have heard us, we've discussed some of the notions and concepts of maturation. Let's just go back over it to make sure that we know what we mean when we say that we're trying to mature. The phrase that I like to use, I'm sure many of you have heard me use it before, the phrase that I like to use to describe maturity is going from predictable to appropriate. Let's unpack that phrase for a moment. Predictable is how I would react based on my given birth nature. Every one of us has a birth nature. And that nature makes us largely predictable in given situations. A fellow came over to me and said that a certain person who was collecting money in the community is a cheater. He's richer than you and I. He's richer than you and I. So he was surprised that I didn't react. And he asked me, I said, that's pretty good that you're asking, because I would have expected you just to go to the next person, just tell them the same thing. So actually, you transcended a little bit by asking why I didn't have a reaction. Yeah, I'm a little curious. I told him, you may or may not be correct. Don't know. I don't know the fellow. You may or may not be correct. But my sense is that you would say that about just about anyone who was collecting tzedakah from you. And so while it may be that this fellow is in fact a cheater, I don't know. Wouldn't know him if I tripped over him. He has a cheskes kashrus. Can assume that he is a poor Jew, needs help. But your nature makes it predictable. And so whether you're right or wrong about him, you're wrong for having the assessment because you haven't worked on yourself. When you get to the point where you are able to help somebody, even if maybe he's a cheater, and you're able to do it with calm and with pleasant, in a pleasant way, with a pleasant manner, to help out a fellow who might be a cheater, then you can start choosing who to help. But until then, work on yourself. Don't work on him. Just give him money. What do you care? Famous story of the Sanzer Rav. There was a certain gvir who was always pointing out cheaters among those who were coming to him for tzedakah. So the Sanzer Rav said to the fellow, he said, the difference between you and me is that I'm willing to give to 999 cheaters in the hopes that one poor person will in fact get what he needs. You're willing to turn down 999 honestly poor people with a fear that one cheater might get some of your money. That's the difference between you and me. Sanjay Rav couldn't go to sleep at night if there was any money left in the house. It had to find its address before he went to sleep. Everything. Absolutely everything. See, was he born with that nature, or did he develop that nature? I can't tell you. I am not inside the Sanzer Rav. But I can tell you that this fellow was predictable. So what would he need to do in order to become appropriate? The answer is he would need to stretch himself to become someone who with ease, with a pleasantness, with a graciousness, with a good nature, can give to cheaters right, left, and center. No problem. Absolutely no problem. Can give to cheaters right, left, and center. Not because we care about the cheaters, because we care about ourselves. I have to develop myself to the ability with a pleasant smile and a pleasant demeanor without any churning in the stomach, without any oy vey and how could it be? And No problem. No problem. Get to the point where I can give to the cheater without any problem at all, to give him tzedakah with a pleasant smile. Maybe he's a cheater. Absolutely fine. When I've achieved that, When I've stretched myself to the point where I have that generosity as part of my nature, I now have the possibility of becoming a choosing person. Now I can choose. Now there's the Yetzer Hara. Now there's an issue involved. Now, should I give, should I not give, becomes an issue. A fellow came to me a couple of weeks ago, and he has a terrible problem. He says faux pas. He says things in conversation that embarrass himself. Sometimes they're even usur, but he feels terrible afterwards, that he's offended people, and he's this, and he's always trying to tell himself that when those situations come up, he should be quiet. What do I suggest? So I said, nothing. I have no recipe for helping you. Absolutely none. I've been around the block too many times for that. No recipe to help you. Have you ever considered developing your capacity to be silent? Develop that part of yourself that is able to listen graciously, pleasantly, without churning in your stomach for hours on end, without it bothering you. When you've developed that side, then in the moment, there'll be a choice to speak or not to speak. You'll look at the situation and you'll be able to decide whether this situation calls for you to speak or not speak. You may be wrong sometimes. You may make the wrong decision. Human beings are wired to error, and we need to learn from our mistakes and understand afterwards how we assess the situation differently than perhaps it really was. Human beings are prone to error. But if your nature is always to be speaking, then it's an impossible task that you're asking yourself. In fact, I would call it ridiculous. How could you do a thing like that? It's not part of your nature. If you're practicing, achieving a certain degree of inner peace as you listen and attend, you know, take some yoga lessons, go to some Zen seminar, because they've got the other extreme. They don't know how to be active. But at least use what they have to offer, and learn how to quiet any internal noise that has you wanting to speak when somebody else is speaking. You quieted that down. Didn't eliminate your ability to speak. You added the ability and the tendency and the nature to be completely silent. Ah, as you're doing that, what's happening? You are becoming more and more appropriate. That means increasingly you're coming to situations, able to look at the situation for what it is and respond appropriately. Not always correctly, but appropriately. Because you've got more tools in your toolbox. In the world of therapy, we say that if all you have is a hammer, all problems begin to look like nails. When therapists only have one approach to therapy, then somehow every problem that presents looks like a perfect example of the problem for which I have the solution. It's the mother syndrome. The mother says to the daughter, "You couldn't possibly have the problem that you think you have. You must have this other problem. And here's the solution. And I know I'm right, because I'm your mother. And I don't have a solution to the problem that you claim you have. And therefore it must be you don't have that problem. You have this other problem. And here's the solution." And if it sounds silly when we describe it as a mother syndrome, we look at ourselves and handling many situations in ways that look frighteningly familiar to the way we handle hundreds of other situations. And it begs the question, is there no uniqueness in this situation? Can you not appreciate and look at the uniqueness of this situation? No, this is a perfect example of Nebuch. Predictable. At this juncture, let me just pause to see if there's any questions about the basic structure of going from predictable to appropriate, just so perhaps that I haven't yet spelled out as to what the definition is of predictable to appropriate. Check your pulse, see if you're still awake, if you're still in the land of the living. Questions, comments, reactions? Should I take that to mean that I'm absolutely off in dark space, or that we're on the same page? On the same page. Okay. I'm sorry? All right, that's good. That's good. We don't mind read. Let's move over to what I consider to be one of the ideal ways that we become an adult. We become an adult when we recognize that we are more adult than someone who is less adult than we are. That means that we are comfortable with the fact that we have actually accomplished something in this time that we've spent past age 20 or 30, that we are growing, and that there are those in our world who are less mature, and that's okay. We don't demand of them to be more mature. We understand that there's a difference between somebody who's been working on maturing for many years and someone who has yet to begin the road. The perfect example of that is parents and children. And the specific illustration of that is how a parent handles a child's tantrum. That is the opportunity for the child to discover that there's such a thing in the world called adults. And adults are not just bigger children. That's Aesop's world. In Aesop's world, I've grown more than you have, and so I control the keys to the car because I'm bigger than you are. And that is what the child looks forward to exclusively. When will come the day when I'll be big and tough and able to push my weight around everybody in my world? In the world of Esav, Kol Da'alim Gvar. Whoever is stronger wins. So you're already 20 or 30 and you have all of that strength and you've got the power and you've got the money. And I'm just a child. And I'm trying to assert myself on your turf. I'm trying to be also big and tough and say, I want and I want and I want. And all it is just your want versus my want. And Kol Da'alim Gvar. Whoever is stronger wins. And that creates what incredibly looks like a power conflict between parents and children, particularly when children are tantruming. And I sometimes look at those situations and I say, young parent. Young in every sense of the word. Young parent. You are so much more adult than your child. What are you doing in the fray? You're decades further along in your development as a mature human being. Let me ask you, why should your child want to become an adult? If the answer is, because then I have the right to go to the freezer and take ice cream whenever I want to, not just when Abba tells me I can, that's a rather modest accomplishment in becoming an adult. Everything that the child is asking through the tantrum is one fundamental question. Is there something to look forward to in becoming an adult? Is there something that adults have that is not just an issue of throwing around their weight and their passions, the five senses that they were born with and the taivas that they were born with, but there's something about being an adult that is extremely attractive, and I want to also become an adult? There's that famous story that a secular Jew was sitting next to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky on a flight, and this old secular Jew couldn't help but observe how often a grandchild would come over and ask Rabbi Yaakov if there's anything that he needs, to offer him a drink, to check with him if there's something that could make him more comfortable, to sit and talk with him for a moment. And this old Jew couldn't help but comment, "My grandchildren would never do anything like that. Tell me, how come your grandchildren are like that?" So Rabbi Yaakov gave a very humble answer. Rabbi Yaakov said, "Because I'm two steps closer to Mount Sinai than they are. You come from the world of Darwin, so you're two steps closer to being a monkey. They're more advanced than you are. They're two steps further away from being a monkey. My grandchildren think that I'm two steps closer to Mount Sinai, and therefore they would like to get closer, and they would like to have more of a connection to Mount Sinai. So I'm their connection to Mount Sinai. So that's why they come over, and they want to have a connection with me. They don't necessarily want to come running to have a connection with somebody who's two steps closer to being an ape." But there's a deeper answer, and I think that Rabbi Yaakov was alluding to it in his humility. And the answer is, Rabbi Yaakov was becoming every day more and more of an adult. There was a reunion between Rabbi Yaakov and his sister in Russia, close to 70 years since they had seen each other. They had met once again. And the sister asked one of the grandchildren who accompanied him, "When did he learn to speak? When did he start speaking so slowly?" She had remembered him as a child prattling. And here, Rabbi Yaakov was such a developed person that every single word was measured to such a degree that once, when a fellow was meeting with Rabbi Yaakov, he clandestinely brought in a tape recorder. Remember the old tape recorders? They had a big click when they stopped. And he had this hidden. Tape recorder was hidden, but the click betrayed him. And about 3/4 of the way through the conversation, click. And the fellow turned 14 shades of purple. And Rabbi Yaakov said to him, "It's fine. It's been 30 years since I said anything that couldn't be recorded. Every word can be recorded. It's fine." No slip-ups. He had developed the nature of thinking about what he was going to say before he said it. He wasn't just being a good boy trying to hold back from saying things that are usur. That's childish. Maybe good and correct for children. Children should learn to not say things that are usur, you know, like a good boy and a good little girl. But as we develop, that becomes a guidepost. If I'm not supposed to say things that are usur, how do I develop myself? Rapam once said to a group of fellows who were struggling with Hilchos Lashon Hara, trying very, very hard with all sorts of kabbalos as to how they were going to handle Hilchos Lashon Hara, but they were already adults. He said to them, "Why don't you take the time to develop your love of a fellow Jew? Develop Ahavas Yisrael. Stretch yourselves. Develop your love of another Jew. And you'll find that Lashon Hara is not so hard. It's not oppressive. Speaking about somebody that you love, that you care about. You're not going to besmirch his name. You're not going to mess him around. You're not going to cause him a loss. Because he's somebody you care about. Develop Ahavas Yisrael. Will there then be questions about whether to say something or whether not to? Absolutely. Will I sometimes perhaps get it wrong? Also wired in. But at least it's a fair playing field. A lot of the ways that I see fellows trying to work on themselves reminds me in the gym, and somebody says, you know, you have to win that race. And he hasn't trained as a runner at all. You have to win that race. I don't know. I don't really know how to run. Never really developed myself as a runner. I'll give you $10,000 if you win the race. I guess I'll try really hard. I'll take away $20,000 if you don't win the race. Boy, I guess I'll try really, really hard. The whole story is silly. They're talking about winning a race. You interested in running? There's ways to develop yourself as a runner. If that's something that you are interested in doing, there are ways to develop that capacity within yourself, the ability to run. I'm not going to claim whether that's a good capacity or a bad capacity, whether you should develop it or you shouldn't develop it. But revving up how big the reward is and how terrible the punishment is if you run the race and win it or don't win it is not going to do the trick. Perhaps it'll provide the incentive for you to go back to a trainer and talk seriously and start practicing and working out seriously your running. That may be. Maybe the incentive will get you back there to thinking about that. But the drill is to develop yourself as a runner. What are you talking about winning the race? And they're kicking themselves. I didn't do it. I had a Kabbalah, and I didn't do it, and I did do it, and I didn't do it, and I did do it. And I said, Rabbona Shalom, did you ever develop your sense of keeping your word? Is that something that you've developed within yourself? That you don't commit to something unless it's absolutely clear to you that you're going to follow through with it? That you never use the word hope? Ever. I hope I'll do it. I hope so. I hope to be there at 4 o'clock. I hope to. Kill hope! Kill it! It means that you're a person who can't be relied on. Does that mean that I'll always be there at 4? It might happen. Something could happen, chas v'shalom. An onus could happen. But it'll be an onus! It's not going to be I hope to get there. I know what I hope to get there means. It means I can roll over a few more times in bed. Because I'm still hoping to get there. I'm hoping on my left side. I'm hoping on the right side. I'm hoping as I turn off the snooze button. I'm hoping. I'm doing a lot of hoping. Like a door handle. A hinge. Right side. Still hoping. Very much hoping. Oh, how much am I hoping? Hoping. Oh, I really hope that I get there. I really hope so. To the end of the world, I hope. I'll swear on a stack of Bibles that I hope to get there. Who cares that you hope to get there? So the fellow's kicking himself that he's not living up to his... He took a Kabbalah and he did... How do you take a Kabbalah? With what tool did you take a Kabbalah? Tool of revving it up? That's called taking a Kabbalah? Hearing some talk about the fact that it was really important, so you got revved up and you took a Kabbalah? What about developing the tools? Look at yourself with an honest sense and develop the tools. We are born with capacities that are not evident at birth. Some of us never go past the capacities that were developed at birth. It's one of the most frightening thoughts. With that thought, I wake up, and with that thought, I go to sleep. I was born a good speaker. I was born a pretty thinking person. I was born a people person. That's pretty scary. Because I'm closer to the other side than to this side. And I have to ask myself, have I done anything with my raw material? Or am I basically playing out the script that my talents and basic birth nature would dictate? So, yeah, but it's good stuff. You're doing good stuff. Yeah, but they're not going to ask me if I did good stuff. They're going to ask me, what did you do with the raw material that we gave you? That's the question that I'm going to have to confront. You had raw material built deep inside you. What did you do with it? Well, nothing. Everybody was applauding me while I was just using my raw, my nature. Everybody was applauding while I just used my birth nature. So it never occurred to me that I was supposed to develop myself. But that time that you offended your child, the time that you couldn't manage his tantrum, there are things that we sent you along the way that showed you that you needed to develop yourself. We sent you indications through your wife, through your child. We sent you indications that you need to become more of an adult. What did you do with those indications? I really tried to beat him down. I knew I need to educate this guy once and for all. But maybe we sent that to you so that you would educate yourself. And that he would then see what it looks like. That there's a growing, becoming adult. It's one of the reasons why people get blessed with grandchildren. Hopefully they can see the difference between how they relate to grandchildren and how they relate to children. My older children sometimes would ask me, you relate to the little ones so differently than you did when we were little. And I said, well, you think I was standing still for 20 years? Think I'm a robot, a mechanical father? They're grandchildren already. My younger children are my grandchildren already. Not everything that they do gets me worked up. So there are moments, the tantrums, the willfulness, the desire, the five senses, the this world of the child encounters a parent who is looking at this world with an eye towards what comes next in the next world, with an eye towards transcending, with an eye towards growing, not just in the Esav sense, but maturing in the Yaakov sense. And he says, whoa, there's something about being an adult that I want a piece of. And he starts acting more like an adult, and he starts asking questions more about what it's like to be an adult, and he starts checking, and it becomes a process of, I want some of that. Let me in on the secret. I want to know what it takes to become an adult, because I see that you've got a certain peace and a certain wisdom and a certain ability to see the world for what it really is. I want a piece of that. And it's not just because you're clever. And then, of course, is always the fear that the child will simply assume that the parent is clever, because the child senses that the parent is more mature. The parent has grown. The parent doesn't just see things in its simplicity. One of my Rebbeim once remarked that it was the turning moment in his life. Interesting. Little vignette. He was walking across the street with his older brother. Considerably older brother. And he pointed out a fancy car. He pointed out a car that looked very, very sharp. And he pointed it out to his brother. And his brother said, it's just new. It's just new. All new cars look like that. Just new. And he realized in that moment that his brother had an additional piece of wisdom that he didn't have. That he was taken by a certain externality, and his brother was able to cut through that. It's just because it's new. It's not a particularly fancy car, just new. Some new cars look sharp. Every time we encounter the child, every time we encounter a tantrum within ourselves, the moment is to stretch the muscles of being an adult. Does that mean that anybody can tell you what the right thing to do is when your child is tantruming? Never. Nobody can ever tell you what the right thing to do is when your child is tantruming. But there's one thing that we can always ask. Did you feel within yourself that you had choices? That by your nature, you could let it go, you could point it out, you could... Do you have choices within yourself? If you do, then whatever you do is going to be an expression of your adulthood, even if at some point you would consider a different, maybe I'll take a different tack. But if you don't have choices, you have not developed another possibility, then whatever you do shows him predictability. And I don't mean predictable in the sense that a child's life should be orderly and predictable, in the positive sense of predictable, but in the sense that there's nothing to grow towards. There's no Yaakov. It's all just Esav. I very often give classes where I train teachers. And because of the nature of these classes, not everybody who comes to the class is a bona fide adult. Some of them are just teachers. So I'll get things like, well, the boy did such and such in the class, and I responded such and such. Is that okay? And I say, do I look like your third grade teacher? Like, give you a star chart? You know, maybe a star on your forehead? I mean, what are you asking me? Well, you've been saying that you got a this and you got a that. I said, I didn't say any goddess. I've been talking about stretching possibilities. So, I did this and this. Is that okay? Listen again. I don't care what you did in your classroom. You're in charge of your classroom. I have only one question to ask you. Did you feel that you had other options? Internally, in your own internal energy, did you feel that you had more options? You could have either let it go, you could have pointed it out, you could have ripped the guy's kidney out. Did you have other options? If you had other options, then I'm happy to discuss with you the pros and cons of the various options. It's a wonderful discussion. That's what we're here for. You speak to somebody with a little bit more experience, and you talk it out because maybe there was something you saw, maybe something you didn't see. But if you only have one option, you are a one-trick pony. That's it. I don't care what you do in your classroom, because even if it was correct yesterday when the student did that, I can tell you for sure that at some point it's not going to be correct. The teacher who always wakes children up who are dozing off in the class. Is that okay? I said, I don't know. You tell me. Is it okay? Well, you said about... I said, what will happen on a day when a boy comes to the class and he's been talking for the last week and a half that his uncle's getting married, and he comes to class the next morning and he puts his head down and falls asleep? Will you be able to praise him for having come to school and let him rest a little bit? Or will you wake him up also? If you're programmatic, it may be that 80% of the time you're going to get it right. But 20% of the time you're going to get it dead wrong, and you're going to hurt this child terribly. Because here he made this tremendous effort to come to school, and you're going to give him a hard time about dozing off. So tell me, is it a good thing or not a good thing to wake up children who are dozing? Oh, well, then I'm not going to wake up children who are dozing. I don't want to do that. Hello? All I want to do is expand your options. That's all we're looking for. I remember one of these Rebbein just insisted that there was no other option. Because what else could you do when a child did like that? As if, like, you know, just human nature. You know, what else could you do? I don't know where the kid did something and he knocked out the kid's headlights. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he just ripped into it. So I said, looking very senior, rabbinic, thoughtful, stroke of the beard, I said, did you consider walking around your desk twice? She goes, how's that going to help? said, I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. But it's certainly not what you would predictably be doing, so it'll stretch you. So you're telling me that every time he does it, I should walk around my desk? No, I think that would be ridiculous. That seems like a very silly thing to do. Why would you want to walk around your desk twice? How's that? So I don't understand you. That's good. That's not a bug. That's a feature. In the programming world, that is not a bug. That's a feature. The fact that you don't understand me is good news. It means that you're going to need to stretch in order to be able to get what I'm talking about. And that stretch will expand you. It will open you up to more possibilities, and then we can sleep at night. We as parents can't sleep at night if you are a one-trick pony. If you're somebody who has expanded your repertoire and you have at your disposal more options and you're continually working on yourself and growing in the options that you have available, then we sleep at night. Even if you and I might disagree about a particular thing that you did with my child. We might disagree, and that's fine. And it could be that you'll be wrong, and that's also fine. And it could be that I'll be wrong, and that we can live with that too. But what we can't live with is that you're predictable, and so it doesn't matter what I tell you that I think this or I think that, because you're predictable, you're a one-trick pony. And so the key in parenting is really the key of all of our lives. It is the key to continually stretching our possibilities. If I tend to be overly generous, to learn how to say no in a pleasant, compassionate way. If I tend to be tight-fisted, to learn how to say yes in a gracious, pleasant way. To stretch the possibilities so that I am shifting steadily from predictable towards appropriate. Ultimately appropriate is only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the only one who is absolutely appropriate. He has nothing pulls on his strings that causes him to vary from absolute appropriateness to the situation, including everything about the present, about the past, and about the future. Absolute appropriateness. As we become closer to the Rabbonu Shel Olam, we become increasingly appropriate, and that brings us a dveikus. It brings us a closeness to the Rabbonu Shel Olam because we feel just how mature and appropriate Kadosh Baruch Hu is. What was the question that Klal Yisrael asked in the Midbar? Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu im ayin. They asked one basic question. Is a Kadosh Baruch Hu an adult? Or can we get him angry by being naughty boys? Can we get him to love us by being good boys? Can we get him angry by being naughty boys? And the answer came back, no. What you did you can't do, and there's even going to be a punishment for doing what you did. But you do not control the Rabbonu Shel Olam. The Rabbonu Shel Olam is always absolutely appropriate. And that was the message that Moshe Rabbeinu was called upon to continually communicate to Klal Yisrael. The message of what it means to be an adult and the ultimate adult. Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to represent that adulthood for Klal Yisrael so that Klal Yisrael would always look to become more adult. I'm hoping that you walk away from today with a little bit more of a concrete sense, a little bit more operational sense of what that big, beautiful concept of becoming more like the Rabbonu Shel Olam and more dovek in the Rabbonu Shel Olam, what that would look like in real time. That we actually can stretch by stretching the possibilities. Do those possibilities exist at birth? They do not. The potential for them is there. They're in the seed somewhere. The potential for them is there. But the ability to develop more nature than I had when I was born is something that was the feature of Yaakov. Esav confronted the world with everything that he's going to need. Yaakov confronted the world with nothing that he's going to need. Everything is going to come as we grow and develop. Hatzlocha Rabbah.